Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, March 6, 2024. Rocky Mountain Cup Week, Leg 1. Colorado Rapids played their first home game of 2024 this past Saturday. It was an improved performance, but a frustrating draw in the end. The replacement refs are bad, though they haven't screwed the Rapids just yet. And don't tell the AI bots that are now writing soccer articles for Vox Media about all of that. And Rapids 2 will officially be representing the Burgundy and Blue in the 2024 edition of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Joining me now, a man who may actually play more minutes in Burgundy this year than Marko Ilicha, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Good to see you, Matt. And sometime at this session, we might want to do another edition of Hotel Art with Rabbi in Red, since I am on the road in New York City.
Yes, you are there doing your book tour on Dead Rabbis, Mark. So tell me, no, you are not.
Where? Professional conference. I'm here for a professional conference. I brought a book to the session today, thinking like maybe I'll get into a conversation about my book and someone will want to buy it. Nope, nobody asked me about my book. I sold zero copies. That's fine. Maybe I'll sell it on the train back to Pittsburgh tomorrow. I'm riding Amtrak back to Pittsburgh because I like a long, slow, relaxing trip back. So it should be good.
Okay, as someone who works in transportation, engineering, and infrastructure, I much appreciate that, Rabbi. So, Mark, where are you staying in New York? Have you been to Katz's Deli? What is the hotel art situation at your five-star, you know, $700 a night, you know, bachelor suite?
No, it is a three-star hotel in a good part of town, though. It's on the Upper West Side, and you get to see it. This is some sort of weird modern arty thing. It's like very printmaker style, so like a lot of sharp geometric shapes. Everything is in aqua and blue and red and kind of peach with a little bit of orange, with kind of like a tulip thing. I mean, it is almost the platonic ideal of what you would want in hotel art. It's bright, it's enjoyable, it matches the colors of the room. It's totally generic in the sense that, like, it doesn't represent anything. It's inoffensive. It's quite nice. I very much like it. So I give 10 out of 10, no notes, basically. Cannot complain in any way, shape, or form.
Kind of colorful, inoffensive, generally enjoyable. So this is the Drew Moore of modern art then, Rabbi?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Drew is a very, like, reliable kind of player. You know, like he pounded a ball with his head once a year. He was a reliable defender. He was an adept and above average distributor. Like it does all the things. It's not gonna make it into, you know, the Hall of Fame, and that's okay. The National Soccer Hall of Fame, but that's okay. Like, very good, but not, you know, amazing. If there was a Rembrandt on the wall, we'd all worry that I was maybe overpaid and staying in way too nice a hotel.
Yes, when I was, Mark, it would have been right around 2 years ago now, would have been the trip that I took with my dad to the Netherlands and to Belgium to see Cole Bassett for his 5-minute appearance at De Kuip with Feyenoord. But then we also went to the it's not the Reichstag, because I know that's the one in, that's the government building in Germany that the Nazis burned down to kick out all the communists. The Reich Museum. I'm butchering it with the I'm taking a Dutch word and using the German pronunciation because my Dutch pronunciation is not as good.
Reich.
In any case, we went up to the fifth floor and there was a note that there was going to be some maintenance and particularly exhibits on the fifth floor were not going to be available. And Mark, since you've never been to said museum, and listeners, the fifth floor of that museum is where at the time they had all of their golden age artwork. So they had the whole section on all of the advancement when the Dutch were ruling were the main colonial power. They also had a bunch of artwork native to the countries where the Dutch were ultimately inhabiting and conquering and colonizing. So then we got to see both sides, and clearly the Golden Age was a poor term in the end. See footnote 1, colonialism. And that was also the section where they have all of the Rembrandts, including his most famous one, in my personal opinion. I believe it's not the Night's Watch, but it's the one where they're guarding the kingdom or the city, and it's all of them together, and it's a very good Renaissance-y style painting, and it's massive, and my dad and I just stood there and thought about it and then read the little notes in the English language free pamphlet that we got in the museum for 15 minutes, and it was wunderbar. In any case, Mark, something that is not wunderbar is the current state of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We have achieved a minimal truce, I suppose, in the 2024 iteration of it, as the soccer wars continue between the U.S. Soccer Federation and Major League Soccer. And as we've seen it, 8 teams now will have their first teams properly represented in this version of the tournament. Atlanta United, FC Dallas, Houston Dynamo, LAFC, Real Salt Lake, San Jose Earthquakes, Seattle Sounders, and Sporting Kansas City. It was not clear to me how they came up with that. I'm not sure if there was something I missed in the press release on that, Mark. But in any case, for all of the other MLS teams, including your Colorado Rapids, officially the MLS Next Pro version of the clubs, the Colorado Rapids 2 will be representing the team. Mark, we were anti this, obviously. We love the Open Cup here at Holding the Highline. We acknowledge that there is a valid complaint that MLS has from an economic and a scheduling standpoint here. Some of that is self-inflicted because they decided to pause their league play for 6 months to a month in the middle of the season in order to have Leagues Cup, which is outside the scope and the understanding of traditional soccer tournaments, because MLS wants Liga MX fans to watch and attend games in MLS stadiums and then drive revenue and subscriptions to Apple TV and get a bunch of money for that. So it's a complex issue. Some of this is on MLS, Mark. Clearly, MLS and Apple TV do not like the idea of a tournament that they don't have control and sway over for the purpose of their single entity, sole first division order in, you know, in the People's Republic of American Soccer. And we also have to point out that this would be the one platform in which this would be the one tournament in which the rights are not controlled by MLS and some, thereby someone else is controlling and has monetary benefits from the presentation of games that Inter Miami and thus Lionel Messi are included in. But Mark, I'm disappointed in this. I'm excited to see what the R2 kids can do. I know Eric Boucher is going to take that very seriously. We don't yet know the specific roster rules and what's going on and everything, but I imagine it's still going to be mostly R2 guys. And if there is a roster rule that then allows first team players to go down, I would imagine it would mostly be players who would benefit from that. I would not anticipate that Andreas Mexo, Zach Steffen, Rafael Navajo, Jordi Mihailovic are being loaned down for that first game when Rapids 2 play Azteca in a couple weeks coming up. But Mark, I'm disappointed. I think this was like the least bad answer. I look forward to MLS swiftly saying that we'll be going back to all of our first teams playing in the 2025 iteration of the Cup.
Yeah, so the way the U.S. Soccer and MLS decided who is in it, it's the top 8 teams in the Supporters Shield chase who did not get put in CCL. So the Rapids don't get their senior team in because they weren't in the top 8. But I put this out on Twitter and I stand by it, which is it doesn't matter because if you're going to say some teams in MLS are going to put their MLS 2 teams in, their next pro teams in, and others are going to put their senior team in, you're just going to wind up with different names of the same group of people, which is in the first round or two, the team is overwhelmingly reserves and academy players. So if you're going to put your next pro team in, it's going to be your reserves and your academy players, which is why all of this is really stupid at the end. I mean, ultimately what this is Major League Soccer, I think, trying to flex on the league, on U.S. Open Cup. And I think what they're maybe either trying to do is hedge in one direction or another. They basically don't collect enough revenue. They think that the U.S. Open Cup should figure out a way of, like, giving them more money for the privilege of competing. And I think what they either want to do is say, we're not going to be in it, and if we're not going to have control, we're not going to get enough money, then we're barely going to put any effort into it. And if we can get out of it altogether, we will. But we'll throw our MLS next pro teams in, because why the hell not? Or they're going to try for a gambit next year to say, we want more control, we want more money, and because we've got, you know, the big teams in the big leagues, like, you will give us a bigger cut and we will get it. I don't really fully understand it, in the sense that, like, this was a great point that a number of people online made. MLS is complaining that it's a tournament that's poorly marketed and hasn't, like, piqued the interest of fans. The marketing arm of for the US Open Cup until last year was Some is Soccer United Marketing, which was a wholly armed conglomerate of Major League Soccer. MLS. It was basically the MLS version of the hot dog meme from the Tim Robinson show, which I think we mentioned last week too.
Yeah,
basically, we're all trying to figure out who did this, right?
Or it's the Eric Andre.
You did it at MLS.
Yeah, it's the Eric Andre meme where he's got the fake gun and he shoots the guy in the arm training. He's like, why would U.S. Soccer do this, Mark? Like, that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, that's where we're at with the Open Cup. Us Open Cup devotees, we're really disappointed that this is the way it's going to play out. But, you know, like, the good thing is I live in Pittsburgh, and so it's a big tournament for USL. You are in Denver. There are some great Denver teams that are going to be in it at the amateur or kind of semi-pro level. And so that's, like, what you've got going for you, which is this is an opportunity for soccer sickos to go support lower league teams in smaller stadiums. And then hopefully, ultimately, it'll end in something big. And the thing that's still cool about it is the Open Cup is still gives a team a slot in CONCACAF Champions Cup. So there's still a path ultimately for a lower league team. There's actually even more of a path to some degree for a lower league team to wind up competing in a big tournament against big teams, which might ultimately generate them some revenue. So I don't know. I'm trying to not to be pessimistic, but I think ultimately in a year or two, this will all shake out okay. I think MLS will find some way of limited participation and some sort of financially agreeable thing. I mean, it's possible that they'll pull out completely, but at the end of the day, you know, if MLS Next Pro is participating, then you're going to see some of your favorite Rapids players there anyways. And so maybe it won't be so bad. I'm trying to be optimistic.
Yeah, a couple of notes that I'll add as well, Mark. First of all, I want to reemphasize the one time that I asked anybody at the club about this. Chris Armas was absolutely emphatic, saying that he wants to be in the competition. The Open Cup is something that he values. He's won it many times as a player. He obviously was at New York Red Bulls, a club that normally takes that competition very, very seriously. And so the fact that he didn't like that MLS was adjudicating which teams now are taking it seriously and saying that there clearly will be some very strong restrictions on the Rapids in ways that there won't be on 8 other teams. And we've seen it effectively that the clubs who choose not to take this seriously effectively play their we would have said their USL affiliate teams or their reserves, you know, several years ago. Now the term would be you effectively roll out, you know, the bench, some homegrowns, and then some guys on the short term call up from the big club as well. And so I don't know how you couldn't allow teams to then make that choice which tournaments they're going to end up taking seriously. And you see it with the clubs that normally take this seriously, Sporting Kansas City, Seattle Sounders, New York Red Bulls, Philadelphia Union, they generally do well at it. And you see the clubs who normally could care less about Open Cup, any team coached by Bruce Arena in the last 20 years normally is out by the second or third round at the absolute latest. There was a joke that LA Galaxy fans made, I think it was a quarterfinal or a semifinal they made against FC Dallas, and the very next episode of Corner of the Galaxy, they made the joke of, like, Bruce Arena has looked into whether or not U.S. soccer allows paperwork for you to boycott and or forfeit an Open Cup semifinal to prioritize league play. So Armas wanted to take it seriously. I'm sure Eric Boucher is going to do the best that he can. Rapids 2 is probably not winning the U.S. Open Cup. I would be impressed if they beat more than one USL championship or MLS first team side on their way to ultimately getting eliminated from this iteration of the tournament. And I do think, Mark, that there is a valid complaint about the finances around this. You know, we've seen it to where, you know, there's Open Cup tickets that are available on a Wednesday at a reasonable time slot for a Rapids home game, and tickets are 10, 15, 20 bucks at the most. You know, there was the game against Hailstorm where tickets were $10, and I'm not sure there were more than 2 or 3,000 people there. So there's a valid question of a chicken and the egg in terms of who's responsible for that, or it's the, you know, if MLS markets it, will the fans come, or the fact that, you know, there's the sickos who care very much about the Open Cup, make a big deal about it, but then that doesn't resonate in terms of actual ticket sales, revenue, and other stuff. And so in that regard, I think there's a valid argument that there's a lot of people who like the idea of the Open Cup, but then won't drive to their team's stadium when there's a 6:30 kickoff against lower opposition, even if tickets are super cheap, unless they were included in their season ticket to begin with. Last banter topic, Mark, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because I don't think it has affected the Rapids. There's been some bad calls or some missed calls in the live action that's what happened between the game at Portland and then obviously the handball from Jonathan Lewis on Saturday, which we'll get to. But for the most part, VAR has corrected that. So from a Rapids perspective, I think the biggest issue with Scabby, the ref, has been that they're not getting calls right from the live action in the moment that then requires VAR for them to get it right in ways that, say what you will about the pro referees, they are more likely to get right in the actual moment the first time. But we've seen in some other games, Rabbi, where there's been some pretty atrocious calls. There was a guy who's normally a DJ who ended up reffing the Inter Miami LA Galaxy game, and there was a second yellow on a Galaxy player who that was a total dive by Busquets. And then similarly, while I don't think this was a factor in Miami absolutely slacking Orlando 5-0 on over the weekend, there was one of the refs who was involved in that, like, is an Inter Miami fan on his social media, is wearing a messy Inter Miami jersey. And this is not something you would normally see in other leagues. So, for example, in the Pro Referees Association in England, the name of which is escaping me, like, referees actually have to, like, register, like, what team. There's a way for them to go back and get a dossier on where you live, what your local club was, and then also, like, where you had season tickets. And so, for example, Mike Dean, who just retired, was a huge Tranmere Rovers fan, and so he's never actually reffed a game involving Tranmere Rovers or a game at Tranmere Rovers Stadium. I, Mark, would not be eligible to referee a Fulham game. I would try to get one of the random international games at Craven Cottage. And so there's clearly how much of this is a lack of supply and demand, but I think unfortunately this is going to continue, and we're recording this on Wednesday night. Bogert hasn't tweeted about there being an agreement. I would imagine it would be more scabs, more rats on Saturday for the Rocky Mountain Cup. Mark, what have you made of the poor refereeing? Has it been a significant issue? I mean, are we legitimately seeing a continuation of this boycott, of this protest that I think has gone longer than we were expecting?
I haven't seen a dip in quality, personally, a little bit here or there. I think there have been a couple games, including the first Miami game or maybe the second Miami game, where I just watched the referee just not seem like he had a lot of control of the situation. Like, they don't have the calm, cool collectedness there's a little bit of a respect issue sometimes too. I feel like MLS players are mass confronting referees too. I don't like that. I mean, I think as much as I would prefer they use union refs, I don't think it's okay to disrespect the referee in any sport. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Yeah, I'm a little surprised at how long it's dragging on, especially since MLS is making fistfuls of dollars. And I don't think there's a whole lot of fans or probably any players who particularly think that MLS should be holding out against the kind of well-known, well-trained referees over an issue that overwhelmingly boils down to healthcare, like whether these guys get a health plan or not. That kind of like, I don't think there's a lot of, in America in the 21st century, there's just not a lot of sympathy for you don't deserve a health plan or your health plan should be semi-unaffordable. And that's a reasonable request from your employer. Like most of us want healthcare and think it's the one of the bare minimums of what our employer should provide, especially when our employer signed a, you know, ginormous television deal with Apple for the next couple of years for television streaming rights, and earns additional revenue from, you know, hoarding boards and electronic signs, front of kit sponsors. Like MLS is starting to enter the salad days. It's starting to enter like real, you know, there's no world right now, although we'll hear about it when the CBA comes back up in a couple of years with the players union, but like, there's no world where you can make an argument that like MLS is really struggling financially, right? Like owners will beat down the door to get in. The league just signed a new TV deal. They've got Lionel Messi and Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba. And it's a really good, and the economy in the United States is very good. We're through the pandemic. There are no excuses anymore, right? And so this is just a good time to like do what's right and say we want the best refs on the field now, and okay, we'll give you, you know, full health care with the salary raise and all the things, and you know, I mean, you know, they'll come back to the table I think soon and figure it out.
Mark, shall we get on to the Colorado Rapids 1-1 draw with Nashville SC?
We should. It's a kind of an odd game to like review. But it ultimately, I think for me and you, this is one of those games where like, okay, signs of light.
So we'll start with the actual lineup, Mark. I think we were both a little surprised that it was an unchanged lineup from the season opener that Chris Armas rolled out for the Colorado Rapids. Calvin Harris deservingly starting on the right, and then the other two questions we had, Mark, were at center back and then at holding midfielder next to Connor Ronan, and it was Moise Bombito in the back four next to Andres, and then Oliver Larraz making his debut home start, not his first home appearance for the Burgundy Boys. And obviously the big question, Mark, we had going in from a Nashville standpoint is what were they going to look like injury-wise, and Hani Mukhtar not available, and I can't remember the name of their English striker off the top of my head right now, but he was also not available. So Teal Bunbury and Tyler Boyd starting up top, Mark, in, you know, what was a midfield five that was a very flat and very back five. I was expecting the Rapids to actually get a result in this one. They got a draw at the very least, but, you know, Mark, I'll just run through some of the ones that really stood out for me. Sam Sturridge, thank you, in the Zoom comments there. Sam Sturridge was unavailable for Nashville SC. And so, Mark, it was another game similar to Portland. The opponent did not have their main stars, and they set themselves up in that way to counteract what the Rapids were doing. And this is a valid question I have about the Chris Armas system, where if they're going to try and press, how do you do that against a team that is inherently sitting deep that also does not want the ball? And then how do you break down an opponent that has numbers behind the ball? But you know, nonetheless, I thought there were some definite better performances. You know, Cole Bassett, I thought, did a really good job trying to create chances. Jordy Mihailovic had better moments, and he had more of those moments. I don't know on the whole of the 90 minutes that he put in a particularly impressive performance for a player who's now the most expensive transfer fee in club history. He did have that really nice ball to the back post that Rafael Navajo wasn't able to finish. Hafa had two really good chances and hasn't been able to score yet. You had that Darren Yapi moment where he was pressing after he came off the bench in the second half, and there was almost the gaff at the back for Joe Willis, but Yapi wasn't able to finish. And in the end, I wasn't super surprised with that, to be honest with you. I thought Moise Bombito had some really good moments. He had that really great block on Teal Bunbury. Zach Steffen had his Tim Howard-like save off of that corner that Nashville had off of that Bombi block as well. So I thought Bombito was better, but Mark, I'll throw it to you. What good things would you like to highlight?
Yeah, all that was true. You know, it is hard to get excited about a first half 0-0 draw, but the fact that the Colorado Rapids controlled the tempo of the game made it hard for Nashville to play through them and kind of kept them off the board. There were very few shots for either team. It felt like, to some degree, you could argue both teams were kind of feeling each other out. But at some point, you're not feeling each other out anymore. You're just playing good defense, and you're making it really difficult for the opponent to play through you. I think the overall, I was surprised that Darren Yapi came off the bench and was provided an immediate spark. That near goal on the mistake at the back by the goalkeeper, Joe Willis, was really fun. And Yapi had a play in, I think, the 83rd where he received the ball, kind of did a half turn, and then a Cruyff behind the back pass to Omir Fernandez, who was rushing on, who then took a shot point blank that didn't go in. But like those were good moments, and the Rapids showed a lot of brightness in this match and a lot of energy. I think overall the pressing, I didn't see the pressing like work to like create a ton of turnovers, but it did in a few spots. And more importantly, when the Rapids got, when Nashville was able to play through the press, there were other players there defensively to back them up, which is not what happened in Portland. In Portland, when the opponent broke the press, it was like gallop straight onto the goal. So that was good to see, and they just overall looked kind of more organized and so on. I thought Ollie LaRoz had another very good game. Moise Bombito had a very good game, a very, very good game. He was kind of everywhere he needed to be. He was never out of position. Physically, he's, you know, it's hard to argue, and we knew this last year, but I just want to say it again. It is really clear to see what the Rapids coaches and front office see in Moise Bombito, which is a really fast, really big player who also has some pretty good physical instincts for the game. His positioning will continue to be a work in progress, but right now it is really rare to have a guy, I think he's 6'4", right? Like, it's rare to have a guy who's that big, whose ability at closing distance is really that good, which is why the team was able to play him at fullback at spots last year. So that is really fantastic. And, you know, hypothetically, if one of your center backs is incredibly fast, you can get away with it with your other one. And I don't know how fast Andreas Maxo is. In general, my sense is that he's kind of average. But that means that, you know, Moise Bombito can cover up for a lot of that. So a lot of positive signs. As you mentioned, though, last week, Matt, the future schedule for our first seven games is really tough. And so we'll get to this when we get to the bad thing. But, you know, there's also the drop points aspect.
Yeah, before we get to my other good things, Mark, just to confirm, Moise Bombito is listed at 6'3", 183 pounds. Mark, as someone who has, as someone whose college sweetheart was 6 feet tall, I think I'm pretty good at being 5'6" and standing next to people and then having a good sense of where their height is. I should say that that is, that number that is registered is when they join MLS for the first time. Moise Bombito was obviously, you know, 22, 23. When he joined MLS. So for the fans who want to look at in having the Darren Yapi discussion, seeing him listed at 6'1" and 174, that is normally not updated from when they joined MLS. I feel pretty confident, Mark, you know, having stood next to Darren in his rookie year where he didn't play a whole lot with the first team, seeing him with Next Pro and then doing the feature on him last year, I feel pretty confident he's probably 6'3", at least 180. as well. So keep that in mind when you look at some of those numbers, folks. You know, that isn't always accurate. I've stood next to Dylan Cerna, who I think was listed at 5'8", and we are basically the exact same height. And so he is not 5'8". Connor Ronan, I think, is 5'6", 5'7". That's accurate, Mark. Jack Price wasn't inaccurate. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any recent or current member of the Colorado Rapids whose height-wise is inaccurately described based on my qualitative measuring up standing next to them. But so, Mark, another really good game for Calvin Harris, who I thought was lively from a wide role and then did a lot with the little service that he had. We could say that Rafael Navajo has had a lot of really good chances so far in 180 minutes of 2024 Rapids play, but hasn't necessarily finished on those opportunities. Cole has created a lot for himself. Jordy hasn't had long stretches of really good film, but in the three or four chances where he's gotten to create something, he's created something good. Calvin Harris continues to be a productive wide player, and obviously the most productive thing that he had was creating that chance, you know, that ultimately led to the own goal scored by Shaq Moore. That did have, I think it was Navajo at the back post as well. So I effectively count that as a goal, Mark, because Harris put it right into a really good spot. And if Shaq Moore doesn't get to that ball and Navajo gets to it, just unfortunate. There was a really good knockdown header in the spot that Willis couldn't get to it. And maybe somebody miscommunicated there on that. Maybe this is an opportunity for Broadway City Soccer to have their own debate about who's at fault for that own goal. Just like Mark, we had that conversation about the Jared Watts, Tim Howard own goal from 2017, if I'm remembering correctly. So Calvin Harris continues to play really well, Mark. Regardless of what we both think about Omer Fernandez from his times with Red Bull, what we think that he can achieve being reunited with Chris Armas, I don't think there's any question in my mind, Mark, that Calvin Harris is the starter right now, and he should start next Saturday for the Rocky Mountain Cup game. And I don't think Jonathan Lewis is going to be getting a lot of bench minutes right now on that. And then just the other really good thing that I had to say, Mark, is that Nashville did present something a little bit different defensively. And they had that fullback who was delivering the long throws. And we do not see a lot of that in American soccer these days. There are still some elements of Gary Smith that are very much old school, lower division English football that aren't necessarily pretty on the eyes, but can be extremely effective. And given what we talked about last year with the Rapids being so weak defensively, particularly on restarts, they've been really solid on set piece defending so far. And Zach Steffen's done a good job with that. Moise Bombito, Andreas Mechshow has done a good job of that. So whatever scouting that Chris Sharpie did, you know, last week to prepare for, you know, oh, Nashville does long throws, we need to be ready for something even when it's normally at midfield, none of those were, you know, the balls came in and got into, in theory, dangerous areas. They were promptly met by a player wearing burgundy rather than highlighter yellow, and then lines were cleared and there wasn't a second opportunity. The only real second opportunity that Nashville had off of set pieces, which were the only areas where they were dangerous in this game, was off of that corner where Zach Steffen made a really great save. A save, Mark, I'm not sure that William Yarbrough or Marco Ilicha makes as well.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rabbi, where do you want to start with bad things, and why is it Jonathan Lewis's brain fart on the handball that leads to the penalty?
It wasn't going to be that. I was going to say one more good thing, which was there was a ridiculously good Zach Steffen save in the first half. I don't even know if the league is still doing goal of the week. I couldn't find any references to save of the week, or, you know, because there used to be the All-State Good Hands, you know, kind of like videos, and I can't find anything referencing that, so I did find the power rankings on the MLS website, and they've gotten really bad. They're like not, they're like a bunch of videos and then like one sentence that's not snarky or funny. It's kind of bummer. The good writers, where have the good writers gone? MLSsoccer.com. Anyhow, hire me. No, don't hire me. I'm busy. What were the bad things? Well, they didn't score again. And as much as you were like, oh, you know, it's basically just like if they scored a goal because Calvin Harris put a good ball in the box, but also not. And also their expected goals was fairly low.
There were a lot of like there was a great pass, I think it was from Cole Bassett, that kind of was supposed to end up on the foot of Rafael Navajo, and he just couldn't get to it in the second half. And you know, it when you have a play like that where it's a pass that isn't like touched, it's not an expected goal situation because no shot was registered. But there were a few of those where they were close, but they weren't quite close enough to deliver something that registered as a shot or a chance. There weren't a lot of corners either that the Rapids were able to make plays on, so they need to create more chances. So chance creation is a thing. This is not like it's a decision that you make of how you play the game. They did it. Unfortunately, last year, what we learned was the Rapids started to get better at chance creation throughout the year and then didn't put those goals in. So they'll have to do a little bit better with that. Some of that has to do with being more aggressive in transition with getting downfield as opposed to, and some of it has to do with too many touches on the ball, like Rapids players taking a second touch or a third touch when they need to hit it first time. The challenge, of course, with me saying, oh, hit it first time always, is that assumes that you can get a quality touch on the ball for a good finish with just your on one touch. And that's easier said than done. That's why, you know, really expensive finishers are there. So finishing wasn't very good, and kind of final third chance creation wasn't as good as it should have been. And that needs to be better because we didn't score any goals. We got an own goal, but we didn't score any goals. Matt, what are your thoughts on bad thing?
Yeah, so just looked up the stat there while you were talking, Mark. According to MLSsoccer.com, the Rapids had a total team expected goals of 0.7 on 7 shots, and they had Nashville at 2.2 on 7. That does include about 0.8-ish or so for the penalty. So even from a run of play standpoint, Mark, even removing the penalty from Teal Bunbury, Nashville out XG'd the Colorado Rapids. One other stat that we have, since I kind of prefer FOT Mob when it comes to these kind of metrics, Mark, they had the Rapids at 0.55 XG on 8 shots. They had Nashville at 1.5. So those two both saying that even taking into account the penalty, that Nashville was more likely to score a goal than the Rapids, albeit most of that was on that shot by Shaq Moore or whomever it was at the top of the box where Stefan made that great save and that Bombito shot. So Nashville had 3 really big opportunities, one of which was a penalty, which they scored on, and the Rapids had a lot of smaller opportunities. And so I bring back the same philosopher, soccer philosopher question mark that I asked you in the last 2 years of the Robin Fraser era, where they talked about, oh, well, look at the chances we created, look at all these metrics and everything. Mark, would you rather have one opportunity that gets you a 0.99 expected goals, or would you rather have 99 opportunities that are a 1% chance of being a goal? And so in that regard, the Rapids again did a good job of being the protagonist, of getting the ball into good areas, but then did not turn those into high quality opportunities, or they turned it into numerous lower quality opportunities. And we have very good metric at this point that outside of sometimes Cole Bassett and hopefully Rafael Navajo and TBD on Jordy Mihailovic, this is a group of players that attacking wise, who were with the Rapids last year, will not regularly score those opportunities. And when you compare that to an opponent having fewer opportunities but higher quality opportunities, and then typically better attackers, more expensive DP9s and 10s, they will generally convert those. And while from a narrative standpoint, the Rapids will play opponents evenly or at times will outplay them, they will lose on the scoreboard, and that is the only thing that matters at the end of the day. And so that continues to be a concern that I have. Mark, we're not going to belabor the handball from Jonathan Lewis. It was bad arm placement. That is not normally that's not something that normally he practices as normally a winger. He is not in the box defending set pieces, but that's something that he should absolutely know better. And I am really curious to see, Mark, how Chris Armas handles these kinds of moments, because we've seen where the Rapids make these kinds of mistakes, how past coaches in the Rapids era, normally they wouldn't dig into the player. They would be very blunt, matter of fact, and short with saying that it's a mistake. He knows it's a mistake. We're moving on from it. And Robin Fraser was almost dismissive of it in that regard, where I wonder, he did not elaborate on how it was addressed or discussed internally. And so that's one thing if it's one William Yarbrough own goal like it was in 2022. It's another thing if it's regularly simple things like not marking your man defensively, not dealing with set pieces, not turning the ball over in bad areas where you're trying to build out of the back. These are just two games, but obviously we're now looking at two really boneheaded defensive mistakes, one from Sam Vines, who I thought was way better in possession and going forward and defensively from the second game to the first game. He obviously recorded that own goal in the first game, and now Jonathan Lewis with the handball that eventually gets VAR confirmed as a penalty, was a handball, and then earns the penalty that gets Nashville back into the game. I'm curious to see how Chris Armas handles this, given the groups of players that have a tendency of making these over the course of long stretches. Like, it's one thing if it's one simple mistake mark, it's another thing if this becomes a repetitive thing. How does Armas handle these to prevent these mental mistakes from happening in ways that clearly the coaching staff last year was failing at as well? And something Anthony Hudson was absolutely horrible at. That Rapids team almost set a record for own goals and penalties and red cards collectively. So that's something that I'm curious to see. I look forward to these mistakes being learned from and not actually happening. Mark, I would also anticipate that Jonathan Lewis will probably not be coming off the bench for Calvin Harris rather than Omir Fernandez this Saturday in the Rocky Mountain Cup. Last thing that I'll say from a big thing standpoint, Mark, just as you mentioned it, these are two games now that the Rapids have had where you could argue they were at a talent surplus relative to their opponent. The best and most important players for Portland and then for Nashville were not available, and the Rapids have gotten 1 point out of that game, and they were not competitive in one of those, and they dropped points from a winning position in the other one. And I'm struggling, Mark, looking at the calendar, to find more than, say, 12, 15 at the absolute most games where I can anticipate the Rapids being at a talent surplus. You know, if Messi pulled a hamstring in that game in Miami, then I think there's an argument to be had there. There will be points where, you know, if Minnesota doesn't have Emmanuel Reynoso, but on the whole, everybody being healthy, the Rapids don't have more than 10, 12 at the most games in which they're at a talent surplus relative to their opposition. And there's only so many injuries that are going to be to a net benefit on their end. And this, as we mentioned, the schedule is going to get tougher. And I think there's a valid question mark that maybe at NYCFC is the best chance the Rapids have to get their first win under Chris Armas in those first seven games of the season. I do not anticipate their winning on Saturday. Last big thing that I'll say, Mark, I agree with you that Ollie LaRoz was improved from the first game. I think he continues to be good in possession, in space, out of space, going forward and being a good ball progressor in ways that we want to believe Connor Ronan is, but he wasn't always consistent with that. That's something Cole Bassett as an eight was absolutely fantastic at. I'm not seeing the defensive component of this, Mark. I'm not seeing the bite in the midfield. I'm not seeing the defensive work rate. I'm not seeing how this midfield is dictating play even when they do not have the ball. That's something Chris Armas has emphasized. That's something that they were fantastic at times under Robin Fraser. That's something that was clearly a hole that has yet to be filled when Kellen Acosta was traded to LAFC. I am not sure that Ollie LaRoz in short order is becoming that player who's doing it, Mark. I want to believe that Chris Armas knows that Jasper Lofelson knows how to absolutely poop house his opposing midfielders with RSL and that he will bring that bite in there. I wouldn't hold my breath about Ollie LaRoz getting a third start. And in that regard, Mark, I have to wonder, does Armas think he has a little bit more of a leash in his first year with the Rapids to where playing the young players to a deficit right now for a benefit long-term at the expense of short-term results is maybe something that he thinks he can get away with. Rabbi, any big things, or would you like to tell our listeners how they can support Holding the High Line?
The big thing is a draw. The big thing is points for this time of year, and it's really important to get on the board in some way, and we're really glad about that. So it's a slow, small thing, but we need to start averaging points every week, and once we can do that, we can get ourselves off the bathroom floor from last year, and that's really valuable. Folks, we are Holding the High Line, a multimedia company that provides writing and podcasting on your favorite MLS soccer team and some other teams occasionally in the Colorado area, these Colorado Rapids. We're the voice of fans who have a nerdy bent on stats and tactics, but who also need therapy for the psychic trauma of being a Colorado Rapids fan. Maybe this year won't be psychic trauma, Matt. Maybe there'll be lots of points to come. We'd love to have a little bit of financial support from you and help this pod keep running and to keep doing our writing on the Substack. And also, we reward the folks that support us with some dope swag from our new logo. We've got swag, great swag, for paid subscribing Highliners. We've got a high-quality athletic shirt. This is a moisture-wicking tee with the new HTHL Crest logo designed by the amazing Dwayne Brown. You can choose from two options, the Hanes Sport Cool Dry Performance Shirt in black or the Sport Tech Drift Performance Shirt in gray camo, which I you can check out me modeling, which I received on Monday this past week. Actually, the black shirts are in also, and apparently, according to the internets, and an email I got today, the stickers arrived in the mail today. So I'm ready to start putting packages together next Tuesday and mail stuff out. So if you are a paid Highliner subscriber, you'll get a shirt in whichever color and size you want. You'll also get a sticker to slap on one of the lift towers at, let's say, Steamboat Springs or Crested Butte. Or any other soccer stadium that you visit throughout the year and want to deface with a Holding the Highline sticker. Or you can put it on your wife's Stanley mug. But you got to subscribe before supplies run out. And we are really glad to have things going. In order for, this is the most important message for you Highliners. For those of you who are subscribers, you should have already received an email at your email address. That is oh wait, did I email people? I don't think I emailed anybody. I think I asked you guys all that's what I did. I posted a thing on the Substack and said, hey, fill out this form and we'll mail you your shirt. And then you have to chip in a couple bucks for shipping, but it's just a nominal fee to cover our nut of the end of things. But if you're a Highliner and you haven't subscribed and you haven't gone to the Substack to fill out the form to ask for your shirt, please do that, because I can't mail you a t-shirt if I don't have your address, and I mean your snail mail address. So go to the Substack, fill out the form, and we'll mail you a shirt, and we'll mail you a sticker. There's also a question on there regarding whether you want one of the old, from a couple of years ago, Ian Mike We Trust t-shirts, a cool art piece of Michael Azira that a buddy of mine kind of created using a picture. So that John Babiak took a few years ago. So that's all the information. Subscribe to Holding the Highline.
Mark, so for listeners who weren't paying attention, I was out of town. I missed the home opener. I was skiing in Tahoe. Absolutely fantastic powder, Mark. We should talk about it some other time. I wish I had an HDHL sticker to slap onto a chairlift pole to just absolutely troll a San Jose Earthquakes or LAFC fan if they were randomly up there skiing Heavenly or skiing North Star. Mark, am I imagining that the Marco Ilić loan to that Scandinavian club actually hasn't happened and it was just Bogert reporting it? Has that not been official?
What? That
Ilić is going out on loan. Yes.
I don't remember seeing a club official statement. Let's check that. That's a thing that we can look up. But you're right.
I've been looking at it up while you were reading the ad read, and I can't find it. And I could have sworn that I saw it on Friday night, but also there were substances and a hot tub and really good skiing and a girl involved. Whoa. So I had other priorities at the moment.
Matt, that was a lot of honesty there, a lot of truth. Really appreciate it.
For those listeners who are wondering, since a few people have asked, Jonathan Lewis had a better Saturday night than I did in that regard. But let's move on. Mark, so in any case, Rabbi, Tom Bogert's reporting that Marco Ilić could be, you know what, let's look this up, because I remember retweeting it.
I'm looking. I don't think it's there. I don't think there's an official statement from the stadium, from the team.
Okay, well, let's be good journalists here and at least comment on what Bogert actually said.
Go.
In the tweet, which I will find scrolling through the Twitter machine. Okay, source from at Tom Bogert. Norwegian club Sarpsborg finalizing a deal to acquire goalkeeper Marco Ilić on loan from Colorado Rapids. Ilić, 26, joined the Rapids initially as a starter, but the club signed Zach Steffen. Move gives Ilić a chance to start. meets highly rated U.S. Youth National Team goalkeeper Adam Beaudry is Colorado's backup. And that's a worthwhile data point, Mark, since we saw that Beaudry was on the bench for both of these games. And Ilitch has yet to be the goalkeeper on the bench backing up Zach Steffen. Mark, I think this is a good move. Ilitch needs to play. He needs to get his he needs to get his expected saves stats up relative to what they were, where obviously he wasn't saving a lot of shots that the average MLS goalkeeper would have saved as well. Him moving back to an opportunity that's back in Europe then keeps his stock high, if you think just relative to the scout taking a surface level view of MLS and seeing, oh, Ilitch was the starter in the final third of the season last year and they finished bottom of the table. Now he's backing up Zach Steffen, who was a good player for the national team and in MLS, and then he was at Manchester City, and now they're better at goalkeeper, but obviously without him. There wasn't any report from Bogert about whether or not there was an option to buy as well, but, you know, Mark, I think this is a good move for all parties. I expect Steffen to start 34-plus games this year for the Rapids if he's absolutely healthy, and this gives an opportunity for Adam Beaudry to then maybe get more integrated in with the first team from a playing minute standpoint relative to what Abe Rodriguez had to deal with. I wrote an article about that this last week, maybe 2 weeks ago now, about that. So I think it's a good move for all parties. I think if in the end of the day, Mark, we are Rapids mathing that effectively the Rapids are holding out for a player that they'll eventually leave on a free or eat some cost on, but that is effectively then turns into the transfer fee they normally would have paid for in order to upgrade from Marco to Zach. I could see where Horik Smith rationalizes that in his brain, and it's already money that's spent anyway, so does Josh Kroenke even really care?
Yeah, I think this was just a course correction. This was just a mistake we made that we cleaned up without too much trouble, kind of like the Alex Gerstbach situation too. The tricky thing with goalkeeper is there's only two. And so I think teams, well, Matt goes three on the Zoom.
There's only three on the roster, Mark. So you can only have, there's three roster spots designated for.
I'm aware of that, Bobola. What I'm saying is there's only two that can be in the 18. And there's only one that can play at a time, right? Like it's a unique position. Let's say hypothetically you drafted two of the best right backs in the whole world, theoretically, and this actually has happened with Miami. Is it Miami who have? No. Who just moved? Was it Gressel that's at Miami and they just shipped out DeAndre Yedlin?
Yes.
So move him back to the right back position? Right.
Yes.
But before they shipped out DeAndre Yedlin, they just moved Gressel up to kind of like an overlapping right midfielder kind of position. You can't do that with a goalkeeper. There's no world in which you could put two goalkeepers on the field. So if you make a mistake with signing your goalkeeper and think like, oh, he'll be our starting guy, and then turns out you get a better option, which is what happened with Zach Steffen, you have to like basically either put one guy on the bench, which doesn't work out very well. See also Matt Pickens. See also Clint Irwin, who've both been kind of Colorado Rapids goalkeepers who got benched in favor of other goalkeepers, were really unhappy and then moved along. This is probably, I don't think we'll ever see Marco Ilitch again. I think he'll probably be on loan and then he'll never come back. And ideally, Adam Beaudry will see some time with the Rapids and make a little bit of contribution. Even if he just starts 4, 6, 8 games this year, that would be, you know, a really good thing for him. Likely he will be kind of shuttling between Colorado and Colorado 1 and Colorado 2. So we'll see. I mean, I think it solves the problem. It covers the bases. Zegzunter hate, we say in Yiddish, for Marco Ilitch, which means go and be healthy. Like go in good health. I hope he finds success wherever he goes.
Mark, last thing that we'll mention from a news standpoint, we got word this week that the U.S. Women's National Team will be returning to Colorado on June 1st at 3 p.m. Mountain Time. I believe that's a Saturday off the top of my head. Oh, if only we were professional and prepared for this, Mark. June 1st is a Saturday. The United States women's national team will be taking on South Korea in an international friendly. This will be leading up to the Paris Olympics this summer. Mark, how excited are we to see that the U.S. women's national team is returning to Colorado? Obviously going to expect Sophia Smith, Lindsey Horan, possibly Mallory Pugh back from her injury that kept her out of the World Cup last summer, being back. And this is a nice pick-me-up, Mark, given how much Denver has fumbled the bag in terms of national team, in terms of national team competitions and getting games in Denver. Again, to say nothing of the fact that they fumbled the bag with the World Cup bid.
Yeah, Mallory Pugh, who's now Mallory Swanson, if we're scoring at home. It's huge. It's great. You know, the last time I think the team had a game in Colorado was against Japan, if I'm not mistaken. That game was at Dick's. It's really great. A couple other items before we turn the page and go on to next week's game. Thing one, I wanted to say I went through the best source for definitive club announcement type stuff is the club's Instagram. And there is no thank you, Marco, or good luck, Marco Ilitch. Like, there's been no official pronouncement of what's going on, but Tommy Scoops is Tommy Scoops. Tom Bogert can be trusted. That's thing one. Thing two that I also wanted to say, other than the Mal Swanson notation, is I think the best thing I saw from the home opener was the Joan Dobrinsky TIFO. I thought that was really well done, really beautiful. You know, it kind of like it made me misty in the sense that Joan actually came over to my house once to make TIFO. And in fact, the time that Joan came over to my house to make TIFO was the time we made two sticks for the Colorado Rapids defender, Court Ford, whose mom had cancer and then sadly passed away a couple years ago. But when she first was diagnosed, we did a whole thing where we kind of stood in the 26th minute and we made TIFOs, and Joan was hanging out in my garage making TIFO. So to see a TIFO of Joan, who passed of blood cancer, kind of was like very full circle for me and very, very meaningful. I just really love when C13 recognizes their fans and each other. I got to watch on, you know, I wasn't unfortunately able to come to the game because I live in Pittsburgh now. But you know, it was kind of a bummer that the announcers for Apple TV didn't really know what to say. They kind of didn't really fully get it. I do think this is going to be a little critical, and I don't mean to, but it's the second season with Apple, and I'm starting to expect more. You know, some of the Apple announcers like really get it, and they do the research, and others feel like they fly in on game day, they go into the box 2 hours before the game, they report on the game, and they leave, and it's really hard. I mean, I think Jillie Alanababa did a really good job on side commentary, but I still feel like overwhelmingly I don't have a very close sense of the game from the commentators. I think they can pick it up a bit more. Maybe this is sour grapes that, like, how can anyone make me, Mark Goodman, feel good, a person who knew Joan personally, about like feeling like they captured the moment really well, but they didn't capture the moment. And it's something that that's what announcers do. They're supposed to really kind of like explain what's going on a greater level for people who are not there. And if all they can do is describe and name all the players on the field that the ball has gone to, they're not fully giving the picture that I think they do. I am, by the way, incredibly spoiled. For those of you who've been listening to this podcast for a long time, I grew up in Los Angeles, California. I'm a huge baseball fan for the LA Dodgers. And Vin Scully was my announcer in LA for my whole life, you know, growing up from a little kid. And he was absolutely prose and poetry at the same time. And he could paint a picture and he could stretch a boring game into something really great. And it's a high bar to set, but I'm setting it and I'm expecting it, and it hasn't been met. But we miss you, Joan, and I'm glad C38 recognized you.
Yeah, rest in power, Joan. And to your point, yeah, Mark, I'm looking at, I'm going to look with more scrutiny at the Apple TV crews that they have and the research that they're doing. And something that I'm actually starting to do is being more proactive rather than just complaining about it and reaching out to the people that are on the Rapids broadcast and then actually offering them some insight. Some of them, Mark, do their own really good research and then call out where they get that good research from, like Max Brados. And some of them, to your point, are flying by the seat of their pants and assume if they just look through the roster and make a few notes and read the game notes that the clubs put out, which can be extremely useful. They think that they're good, but it's missing the soul component of it in the way that the broadcast of the boycott last year against New England was clearly missing some context, and how much of that was them being told by their supervisors to just completely ignore its existence as the supporter camera very conveniently moved away from 117 in the second half to this random cluster of kids in the corner who probably got comp tickets day of. Okay, Mark, this coming Saturday, March 8th, the Colorado Rapids will be playing the first leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup. This will be taking place at America First Field in Sandy, Utah. Former Colorado Rapids legends and now persona non grata as Paolo Mastroianni is still the head coach, and Zach McMath is still the main goalkeeper of record for the Claret and Cobalt. I can't remember the name, what their colors are and everything, but we have seen some significant turnover from RSL in this past offseason. Mark, Demir Krylach, who was their main talisman but an injured player, false nine, number 10, he has moved on to the Vancouver Whitecaps. Danny Musovski, kind of their equivalent of Dombaji Plus, has moved on as well. And then Jefferson Savarino with their DP attacking wide player, and he moved on to Botafogo in Brazil. They brought in a few players, Mark. The main one that I'm curious about as someone who watches more English Championship than you is Matt Crooks. He comes over as kind of a box-to-box, slightly attacking midfielder from Middlesbrough, and was a good player when they've had more progressive managers than you would normally associate with one of the teams, you know, up in the Northern Yorkshire part of England. He was a very good player under Chris Wilder, who Rapids fans, that name will at least sound familiar to you from when they had when Wilder was the head manager at Blades. So this would have been Sheffield United, and they had overlapping center backs and were doing some interesting things tactically, and then went on to manage Middlesbrough. I believe this would have been the same year that Zach Steffen would have been on loan from him. So he's crudely, Mark, their fullback, their replacement for Demir Krylach, and they brought in a Greek wide player fullback who I have not heard of as well. So looking at the lineup, Mark, Justin Glad is still at center back. They still mostly are playing in a 4-2-3-1. They're comfortably defensive and then trying to play in transition. They have Chicho Rongo, who they brought in for a record transfer fee last summer. Rapids fans, you'll remember him from RSL. And before that, he was also with LAFC, where in my opinion, he was a top five center forward playing up top with Carlos Vela for LAFC. Gomez is their player out wide and kind of their equivalent to Cole Bassett in terms of being a homegrown, gotten some opportunities with the youth national team, and is now breaking in and doing good but not great stuff with the first team, is Diego Luna. And he looks really scary, Mark, because he has a bunch of neck tattoos. So that's RSL's roster in a nutshell, Mark. I should point out that they will be missing some players in midfield. Oeda received a second yellow in that snow game that they had against LAFC, where they won 3-0, and then there's been some reports, I don't know that it's been confirmed, that Brian Ruiz, their main box-to-box midfielder, I would say a good Rapids parallel to Kellen Acosta, maybe, has a season-ending knee injury, so he'll be out for that. So the D-mid and the number 8 are out there. So what does Paolo Mastroianni do from a midfield standpoint? Does he bring in somebody else? Does he change the shape, or is this all on Matt Crooks? Would have been really, really nice, Mark, for them to have Jasper Lofelsen for this game. In any case, Rabbi, what do you see in Real Salt Lake?
Yeah, I mean, this is this is a team that is Chicho Arango and Diego Luna and a whole cast of characters kind of holding it down. Justin Glad's a very capable center back. He's been there for a long time, anchoring the team. Zach McMath is... We know Zach McMath real well. We're real familiar with him. He was in Colorado before he went to RSL, and he's really capable. His biggest challenge in the old days was not being great on claiming the ball on crosses and on corners. I think he's mostly around that. His reaction time and his positioning is very, very good. He's kind of like you're almost like you could just pencil him in as your generic like go-to MLS slightly above average goalkeeper. So he's going to rank at the end of the season somewhere between 16 and 8 in goalkeepers. He's not spectacular, but he gets the job done. My younger child was watching the snow game with me. Actually, it might have been the week before even, and goes, "What's on the dude's ears?" And I go, "Oh, he's got band-aids to cover up all of his earrings, and that's Chicho Arango." So, you know, he's long on tattoos, long on funny earring pieces, and he has a lot of attitude. Like, he is just kind of spitting and jawing at referees and players alike. They had to, you know, they had to kind of push him back and draw the line. I watched that snow game. It was a crazy, weird match. You know, they shoveled really well at the half, but there was so much snow coming down that, like, when McMath saved the ball in, like, the 80th minute, he laid down and the camera was, like, on the ground kind of seeing it. And there were, like, 3 inches of snow on the ground, you know? By the 75th minute, you would hit a ball and it would hit the snow and just stop dead. And all of us in Colorado have played soccer or have played with a ball in the snow and just watched as, like, it doesn't move. And there were moments in like the 70th, 75th, 80th minute where a ball would come in and a player would see it like land right in front of him and stop. And there would just be kind of like this spit take that everyone would, it wasn't even a spit take. It was kind of like a deadpan look that people would make. Like the player would scoop up the ball and just kind of look around and go, "Really? We're playing? Really? Like, what's the point? Like, no, there's nothing." So I think RSL is going to come into this game with a lot to show and a lot to prove, because they didn't really play a soccer game last week. They played something that briefly resembled soccer while they scored 3 goals on LAFC. Diego Luna's really talented. He came out of USL. He was with El Paso Locomotive, I think. And he's just, he's very dribbly. He's incredibly capable on the ball, and he slips a pass very well, which is something that a lot of our more dribbly players in the Rapids history have not had. So those are, I mean, if you can mark up Chicho Arango and keep him from slipping between the center backs and keep him from kind of scoring from an angle because you give him too much space, if you can stay in front of Diego Luna and kind of like contain him, you're good. I am a little worried. The last thing I'll say is this. I am a little worried that a pressing or counter-pressing offense isn't necessarily going to work, because those two guys, Arango and Luna, are kind of classic press big break type players. Like, they really want to use trickery to get just a step of separation between them and the guy. And you know, that's how Portland kind of beat us. So I'm a little worried about that, but hopefully, you know, the defense will be up for it and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I've got some concerns. I don't know how to feel about this game, to be honest, Mark, because, you know, like, all of our collective PTSD says that no matter, you know, RSL could have 16 players out due to injury, and they could be like, they could have no bench, and they could be starting the game down a man. I'd just be like, yeah, if there was any other game that they were going to find a way to get up for, play ugly, absolutely poop house the opponent, get the opponent to make one mistake, and then get out of the dodge with a 1-0 win, it would be the Rocky Mountain Cup against the Rapids. So I already have a loss in this one, folks. I'll take 1-0. I'll take Chicho Arango scoring the one goal in this one. But to your point, Rabbi, like, things might be more unsettled for Pablo Mastroianni, since he was the interim in the back third of that season where Freddy Juarez went to Seattle midseason. And so you look at it, all of Pablo's backroom staff, his entire coaching staff, got cleaned out. That was mostly not his decision from the reporting that's gone on around that. And then you look at Jeftin Saburo, Dan Umasovsky, and Demir Krylach all gone. That's, I think I saw a stat, it was like 30 or 40% of their goal contributions all of last year. Now, obviously, you know, Chicho Arango did come in midseason, and now he's going to eat up a lot of those. He's going to do a lot of that goal scoring that's going to be missed by those three players being gone. But like, the, you know, this is a team that's in some ways a shell of itself in that regard. And so, like, this would be, you know, it seems like every single preseason people come in doubting RSL because they're a middle market team, because of the way that Pablo coaches, because of the way that they play, and they still always find a way to punch above their weight, make it into the playoffs, and worst case scenario, give an opponent a bloody nose on the way out. And this seems like the worst, like, this seems like the fittingest moment of that narrative, and I would not be shocked if still somehow RSL defies the conventional wisdom that is being thought about them right now, and this game being a big part of that. If you look at it, Mark, you know, to your point, yes, they you know, they were clearly ready and prepared to play a game in snow as a team that trains at altitude and has to deal with cold weather in ways that LAFC clearly was not. And Steve Cherundolo's comments made it clear that his team didn't want anything to do with that Snow Classico that they played. In same way as, Mark, I heard multiple players and coaches from the Rapids in the Snow Classico 3 against Portland Timbers, to where once it got ugly in the second half, they didn't want anything to do with it, and the Rapids were able to rise up above, you know, that penalty call and that bogus red card to Axel Huberi in that game. But so, you know, RSL has lost to Inter Miami, which I think you would have expected, and then on short rest, they had a gutsy draw at St. Louis, and they beat LAFC playing their game, albeit with a significant weather advantage relative to the opponent. And so I'm, you know, as much as I want to say, Mark, that no Oviedo or no Ojeda, what's the name of this, that midfielder I mentioned earlier who got the red card, Ojeda maybe, and then
Brian Ojeda,
and then Ruiz, who's out with the injury, like, Mark, you would think that relative to the other two midfields that the Rapids have played, given Gary Smith just bundled up numbers around Ollie LaRoz and around Connor Ronan, and given that, you know, in the first game of the season, you had to deal with Diego Chará, you would think that this would be an easy midfield, that the Rapids would be able to have their way, dictate tempo, and then ultimately win the ball in advantageous areas. And if there was any head coach and any team that, despite being at a severe disadvantage with the situation of that game, could find a way to absolutely dominate that, it would be Pablo Mascherani, and it would be Real Salt Lake in Sandy, Utah, in the Rocky Mountain Cup. And so, you know, this is going to be another barometer test for the Rapids, regardless of what the result ultimately it is. Mark, I want to see the game not decided on a boneheaded mistake by a Rapids player that then gets thrown under the table, or, you know, doesn't get properly dealt with in terms of public comments and then dealt with privately as well. And I want to see the Rapids control the game more consistently, regardless of what the opponent's doing, something they did not do of at all at Portland, and something that they did in stretches, but not enough of against Nashville. And if that happens, Mark, I have belief in what the system that Chris Armas is trying to implement. It's just complicated. It's reliant on the team being very fit, which is not going to come until later in the season. And it's reliant on really, really good chemistry and understanding of all the players around them, which, given all of the turnover from this past offseason, will still take some time. And if the Rapids are able to do all of that and somehow get out of Sandy with a 0-0 or a 1-1, that'll be as good as 3 points normally would be seen in the Rocky Mountain Cup context. So that's how I feel about the game. Mark, how many goals do you have RSL scoring in their win this weekend?
You've decided for both of us how this is going to turn out. I'm feeling draw again, Matt, and I think that we're going to start, there's going to be more goals. This one's going to be a classic kind of Rapids RSL match where it's not pretty soccer, and it gets a little bit weird. And it ends 2-2. So that's what I'm calling. Matt, what do you got for this game? What do you think the score is going to be? And you've already said that you think we're going to lose. By how much?
Oh, well, I had it. I said it earlier. I had it as 1-0 and Chicho Arango scoring. So
1-0.
Yeah,
I said 2-2. So we have a very different perspective on this game. I'm the optimist. That's uncommon in me and you, I think.
Yeah, the other thing that I think is noteworthy, Mark, that would be interesting given that Jonathan Lewis committed that handball, is if we do see Omer Fernandez at some point in this game. He had a very good track record of scoring in Hudson River Derbies when he was at New York Red Bulls, so we'll see whether or not he can continue that and score in the Rocky Mountain Cup, because there's not a lot of Rapids players who have a good track record of scoring against RSL who are still on this Rapids team, unfortunately. Mark, let's get out of here. We did have a couple Ask HDHLs that were related to the Rocky Mountain Cup that we addressed informally, but Rabbi, you got some really good feedback on that online form for our Highliners to get the merch for this year, and there was an open comment at the end for people to provide comments, and you'd like to read them out anonymously because some of them are will give us lols.
All right, we will do that. So I'll read three. We have 26 responses. Not all of them are the funniest thing you've ever heard, but that's all right. One of our Highliners wrote, "I really appreciate all the hard work you guys do. The technical analysis and commentary are great and much appreciated for a team that does not get a lot of coverage like the Rapids. The podcast is a huge mood lifter when I spend all offseason getting my hopes up, only to have them destroyed 15 minutes into the season." Thank you. Right? Isn't that great? Here's, let's see, another comment we had from one of our peoples. "I appreciate what y'all do with the podcast and content so much. It helped me feel more connected to the Rapids and be a better fan. Also, as a woman, I don't mind the shirts being unisex men's sizes." So one shout for not worrying about dropping the ball on women's shirts. This person wrote, "I want a new Scran review or force jammers to do it." I think they mean Juan, so Juaners. So yeah, we're looking for a Scran review coming up.
We'll make a Scran review of what, Mark? Of the tailgate food, of the food in the stadium?
I think yes to all. You know, yes to all above. Like, two more comments because this one's short. "Thank you for all the hard work you put into HDHL. I'm not sure that is said enough." Oh, we don't do it for the thanks. We do it for, I'm not sure why we do it, but what the hell. We do
to
it
maintain our long distance friendship, Mark, because if we didn't have this excuse, then I would only talk to you like once a quarter.
I think you and I like talking about the Colorado Rapids, and the idea that I think you and I, maybe this is wrong, but this is my take. I think it tickles me to no end that other people think that our random conversation about the Colorado Rapids is worthy of listening to. I really appreciate that. I think it's great. You know, I would probably Google these XG numbers and write dumb articles about the Colorado Rapids, whether anybody was listening. Oh, this one was really the best one. This is a movie reference. Matt, we'll see if you can pick it up. The comment was regarding the shirts. "How much blacker could it be? The answer is none. None more black."
Drawing a blank. No idea.
Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap. Okay.
Yeah, it's a less known line from the movie, of course. You know, this one goes to 11 is probably the best. But it also set off a feeling that, like, oh my God, I haven't shown my kids Spinal Tap, and I really need to. And then another person online was like, "You should not show your children Spinal Tap. It is not appropriate for children yet." And I was like, huh, I trust you. But like, that's one of those things as a parent of like young teens where they're like in the phase where you want to expose them to all the movies you thought were great and you won't quite remember. The other day I watched Napoleon, and my kid is Iggy, the older boy, is a huge fan of like historical stuff and kind of warfare. And I was like, oh, maybe he'd want to watch Napoleon with me. And so I started to watch it. And, like, there's a lot of sex between Napoleon and Josephine in the first hour. And I was like, oh, good. I'm glad we didn't watch this together. That would have been really awkward. So anyways, none more black, Spinal Tap. Thank you all for being podcast listeners and Highliners. We appreciate all of your feedback and your comments. We'll probably keep reading it as the season goes on. Don't forget to fill out the Substack form so that you can get your shirt.
Excellent stuff, Mark. Let's get out of here. But first, Rabbi, we have not brought up somehow the fact that I'm wearing the old school black and blue, yes, Rapids drip. And so I want to give a shout out to Dan on social media at Football Top Broker, football, FUTBOL. And he collects and then also secondhand sells and thrifts retro soccer shirts, MLS European, a little bit of a mix. And I met him recently at the Hailstorm friendly, indoor preseason closed or open friendly recently, and he's a contributor also to Box State Footy. He's been on a few times with Wanners over there, and I've known about him. I've heard about him, but we've never like met face to face. Had a really good conversation. Dan is now a friend, and obviously he hooked me up with some really good gear. And so I just wanted to he's not paying me to mention this at all, but just for those of you looking for retro soccer gear in the Denver area and don't want to spend your entire Saturday at Goodwill thrifting through stuff and everything, particularly if you want to find some retro MLS and retro Rapid stuff, at Football Top Broker, he's got some good stuff. And Mark, as someone who, as I mentioned earlier, is 5'6" and therefore prefer a small to a medium, finding this old retro stuff in my size can be extremely, extremely difficult. So shout out to Dan for finding this old school black and blue era Rapid shirt, which I will now be rocking. And Dan, if you find anything that's like old school, like 90s Rapids green in the small, I'll basically pay you my mortgage in order to get one of those. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on social media at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We're on the other Twitter X alternatives as well, though not super active on those platforms. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If we are on a if we are not on a platform that you would prefer us to be on, get in touch. You can send us your questions on Twitter using the hashtag AskHTHL. You can also email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. For the Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com, where you can subscribe to us, support our work, get the merch, help us pay for things like gas, like beer, and like Mark's new fancy mic, which he will have once he is back home in the Memorial Michael Azira podcasting basement. But listeners, we'll see you next week, and hopefully it's not too bad of a therapy session after League One of the 2024 Rocky Mountain Cup.
We might have good things to say. Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.